Civilization is on a collision course. That's the message Paul Gilding, the former head of Greenpeace International, is sounding in his new book. It's called The Great Disruption. The facts, as he spells them out, are frightening. Humans are using 140% of the Earth's resources. The United Nations predicts the world's population will reach 9.3 billion by the time 2050 rolls around. Fisheries are collapsing, deforestation is on the rise, and food prices have spiked again. But Paul Gilding looks at all of this gloom and doom and sees opportunity. Paul Gilding is with us from Melbourne, Australia. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here, Paul.
Great. Good to be here.
So that statistic I just rattled off from your book, that humans are using 140% of Earth's resources, explain that.
What they're calculating is how much area of land and water we would need to sustain this economy as it's currently operating. And to do that on a sustained basis would take 140% as much land and sea as there is on the Earth today. And of course, like living on your credit card, that can't be maintained and the bill is coming due.
Now, we've been hearing these warnings for decades. We're using too many resources too quickly, doing lots of serious damage in the process. And then you look at all the natural disasters just in the past year, hurricanes and tornadoes, massive floods and droughts. What kinds of connections should we be making about all of this?
Look, very direct. Obviously, weather, you know, is always a challenging one. It's why there's such debate on the area, because it does vary naturally. But you look at what's happening lately in the US, clearly, but also around the world in my own country, in Australia. Now, we just had floods that covered an area the size of France and Germany combined. I mean, just massive in scale. And what that says is we've now reached a tipping point in this degradation of the environment where, if you like, Mother Nature fights back. I don't mean in kind of some spiritual sense, but in terms of some basic physics, chemistry, biology. This is a system. And you do certain things to this system and it has a response. And the response of more CO2 in the atmosphere, the response of degrading fisheries, the response of, you know, cutting down too many trees and so on, is that the system changes. And those changes, they're okay for nature for a while because nature adapts to the new situation, but they're not okay for us. This is now a human economic issue that we now have sort of gone past the point of protecting nature for its own sake and moving into a very different scale.
So what do you suppose our reaction as a collective society should be? I mean, early on in your book, you quote Winston Churchill about the way earlier generations were sleepwalking into disaster. I take it you think that we're currently sleepwalking today.
Look, we are, but we're waking up. Historically, look at World War II, I think, is the prime example. Now, we don't act until the crisis hits. We don't act until the evidence is so overwhelming we have no choice left. But then we do amazing things. And that's sort of the exciting part of this, is that we can no longer avoid the crisis, but we can avoid collapse. And by the way, we normally do act when the crisis comes. And we're pretty incredible as a species once we get going. Now, before World War II, if I'd told you, you know, in 1938, 1939, that, you know, we were going to do the things that we did in World War II in terms of social change, in terms of technology change, in terms of how much money we spent. I mean, by the end of World War II, the US was spending 37% of GDP on the war effort, up from like 1.5% before it started. So just phenomenal changes and inconvenient and difficult and challenging, but still nevertheless achieved. And that's what we're capable of as a species. And we will do that when the crisis hits.
When you think about what the crisis would look like that would spur us into action to make these dramatic changes, what kind of scale are we talking about? What does that crisis look like?
It doesn't look very nice, I must say. It does look like food prices spiking to the point where we have food shortages. Obviously, extreme weather, and we're seeing that a lot. And we kind of see the extreme weather as a bit inconvenient. We're not yet seeing it as an economic issue at large scale. But if insurance companies become affected, if we get economic risk being put in the whole system as a result, that becomes a very serious impact. So I think we are going to see economic impacts of hitting the limits to growth. When I say the earth is full, what that means is we can't grow the economy much more than it is today because it simply won't fit on the planet. That's a question of physics.
So you don't seem concerned about this. You seem pretty confident that when this happens, everyone will kind of collectively recognize what has to be done?
Correct, but not smoothly. I don't want to kind of make it sound like it's all going to happen and we'll all be holding hands, you know, walking towards the future. You know, it's going to be pretty ugly at times, as it was in World War II, as it always is in a crisis. There will be arguments and debates and conflicts between countries, and we will think we won't make it at various times. Remembering, again, World War II, I think, is such a good example of what's coming, is that people weren't sure they were going to win. There was absolutely a doubt. They sort of talked a good game, but they were nervous, they were scared that they wouldn't make it through. We will be too. But what I'm saying is from history, the evidence is that we will make this and we'll work it out. The only thing that has to change is for us to end the denial that it's happening and get to work on fixing the problem.
Paul Gilding, he's the author of The Great Disruption. He joined us from Melbourne, Australia. Paul, thanks very much.
Thank you.